always, Joe Ramsey with your worldwide news update. U.S. President Joe Biden on Monday announced a big new military aid package for Ukraine 3 weeks before leaving office. AP correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
The president says the U.S. will send nearly $2.5 billion more in weapons to Kyiv. It comes as his administration has vowed to spend all it has available to help Ukraine before Donald Trump takes over. The administration wants Ukraine in the strongest negotiating position possible, with Trump talking about working on some type of deal between Kyiv and Moscow. The Treasury Department says the U.S. will also send some $3.4 billion in economic aid to pay for things like salaries of teachers and first responders. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Ukraine's president says Russia and Ukraine conducted a prisoner swap on Monday that was mediated by the United Arab Emirates and other partners. Reuters correspondent Arthi Thiaprin has more.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said 189 POWs were brought home, including soldiers, sergeants, and officers from different frontline areas. He said it also included two Ukrainian civilians who were captured by Russian troops at the southern port of Mariupol in 2022. Zelensky also thanked the United Arab Emirates and other partners for facilitating the swap. Meanwhile, Russian soldiers were seen getting on a bus and speaking with Russia's Human Rights Commissioner, Tatiana Moskalkova, in a video posted on her Telegram channel. The Russian Defense Ministry said 150 Russian servicemen were returning home. Moscow added that Russian captives had been released on Belarusian territory and would be transferred to Russia.
Reuters correspondent Arthi Thiaprin. This is VOA News. South Korean officials plan to conduct safety inspections of all Boeing 737-800 aircraft operated by the country's airlines as they struggle to determine what caused Sunday's plane crash of a Boeing 737-800 that killed 179 people. Acting President Choi Sang-mok also instructed authorities on Monday to conduct an emergency review of the country's aircraft operation systems. The plane, operated by South Korean budget airline Jeju Air, skidded off a runway at Muan International Airport, slammed into a concrete fence, and burst into a fireball. All but two of the 181 people aboard were killed. Earth is getting more crowded, although the rate of growth was a little slower in 2024 than it was in 2023. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
Census Bureau estimates find the world population by New Year's Day will be 8.09 billion people. That's an increase of 71 million people this year alone. In the U.S., there were 2.6 million more people, bringing the population to 341 million. The Census Bureau says this coming year in America, the combination of a birth every 9 seconds, a death every 9.4 seconds, and population growth from migration will result in one new person being added every 21 seconds. I'm Jackie Quinn.
New York police say security will be extra tight ahead of celebrations on the last night of the year. AP correspondent Julie Walker reports.
Bomb-sniffing dogs, drones, dump trucks blocking streets, and cops on every corner. That's just some of the NYPD security for New Year's Eve in Times Square.
At this time, there are no specific credible threats.
However, Police Commissioner Jessica Tisch says ever since last year's Hamas attack in Israel, they've been operating in a heightened threat environment.
The public can expect to see a tremendous amount of police resources deployed throughout the area and across the city.
Mayor Eric Adams says it's all about making sure everyone has a safe experience.
There are many officers that have plainclothes assignments to give the element of surprise.
Thousands are expected to pack the small area of Times Square surrounding the ball drop, even more in the buildings and blocks surrounding it. Julie Walker, New York.
That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website, voanews.com. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Today is Tuesday, December 31st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Political unrest in Mozambique touches off a mass exodus to a neighboring country as aid workers cope with new arrivals at the border.
You know, women, people with disabilities, and children are always vulnerable when they are in a crisis like this.
2024 was one of the worst years on record for children in conflict zones.
The last year and a half, almost more now, has been defined by heartbreak, by displacement. Many families have been displaced multiple times, either because of the fighting or because they're just not able to get enough food to survive.
And an African expert says rumors that Niger's military leaders have spread about Nigeria cozying up to France are false. Thousands of Mozambicans have fled to Malawi to escape violence triggered by the disputed October presidential election. The new arrivals are being welcomed, but are encountering a lack of food and accommodation. Malawian authorities say they are working to address those shortages. Lamek Messina reports from Malawi's Nsanji district.
Latest statistics show that Malawi has received about 13,000 refugees from Mozambique in recent weeks, many of them women and children. Authorities say that the number is expected to rise. Sophia Jimu is the traditional leader of Tengani area in Mozambique, who fled to Malawi. She says a lack of food is the main challenge here. For example, yesterday, three children collapsed because of hunger. However, she says, today I have been given 150 bags of maize flour and 4 bags of beans to be distributed to people here at this evacuation center. The political tension in Mozambique escalated after the Constitutional Council confirmed Daniel Chapo, presidential candidate for the ruling Frelimo party, as the winner of the October 9 election. Run-up Venancio Mondlane, presidential candidate for the opposition Podemos party, disputes the results. Platforma Decide, a monitoring group in Mozambique, says more than 200 people have been killed since post-election protests started in October. Dominic Mandila is the commissioner for Nsanje district in Malawi. He told VOA on Sunday that for now, the challenge is lack of resources to take care of the asylum seekers who are currently staying in makeshift camps near the border.
In terms of food and then non-food items, the tents, issues of water, there are several. But we are happy that the partners are coming in. Government is also coming in to support these people.
He says organizations offering help include the Malawi Red Cross Society and Plan International. Jane Mziwina is a program area manager for Plan International in Malawi. She told reporters they are working to ensure new arrivals are protected.
You know, women, people with disabilities and children are always vulnerable when they are in a crisis like this. So our advice to the leadership is that they take special consideration for these special groups of people in terms of accommodation, security, even in terms of food.
Malawi authorities say plans are underway to allocate the asylum seekers to a more spacious center. In the meantime, Malawi's Department of Refugees and the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees in Malawi are conducting a joint assessment to identify the needs of asylum seekers. Lamik Masina, VOA News, Nsanje, Malawi.
An international relations expert says allegations by Niger's military government that Nigeria is colluding with France to destabilize it are false and aimed at winning domestic support. Niger's military leader, General Abdou Hane Tishani, said recently that Nigeria sabotaged a pipeline in his country. He also alleged that France and Britain were planning to set up military bases in Nigeria. Top Nigerian government officials have dismissed the claims. Professor Joshua Bola-Rinawa, Director of Research at the Nigerian Institute of International Affairs in Lagos, tells reporter Mike Mbonye in Nigeria that the country wouldn't allow its territory to be used to destabilize another African country.
The allegations by the military junta or the leadership in Niger Republic, the allegations against Nigeria are not only baseless, they are not real. They are not available, they are not happening, but I want to believe the Nigerian military junta is just acting out of fear and sheer hypocrisy, and more importantly, because of the fear of his popularity among his people back in Nigerian Republic. And in order to look for support or garner more support, especially popular support, I want to believe that is why General Tshisekedi military-led junta in Nigerian Republic, that is why that leadership is trying to make unfounded, untrue, and useless allegations against Nigeria.
Now, specifically, sir, he alleged that the Lakarua terrorist group operating in northwest Nigeria, Sokoto State to be specific, sabotaged a pipeline in his country and that Nigeria gave those people shelter and freedom to do so. What's your take on this?
Nigeria cannot give Lakarua shelter because Lakarua is only a new sect or a new group of terrorists that just emerged in about 2-3 months ago. And Nigeria, that has been tackling the Boko Haram insurgency since 2009, unfortunately, Nigeria, who has been able to successfully rooted out and blotted out every remnant of Boko Haram insurgency, we don't want another insurgency in this current time that Nigeria is trying to stabilize politically, security-wise, and try to straighten up and correct everything economically. So Nigeria will not accept a new sect, a new terrorist group called Lakarua. And that's why headlong, the Nigerian government through the Nigerian military, they have been effectively fighting the Lakarua sect or insurgency or terrorism in northwest Nigeria, particularly in Sokoto. And Nigeria has been able to make sure that they don't have a base in Nigeria. They don't come and make Nigeria a resting or a safe haven as it has happened before in the case of Boko Haram. If Boko Haram had been very effectively and headlong tackled as the current government of President Bola Ahmed Tinubu has quickly responded to the threats and the emergence of Lakarua terrorist group, which have made them to run away from wherever they are coming from, because Lakarua does not belong in Nigeria.
The military junta in Niger also alleged that Nigeria has given France the leeway, the green light, to set up a military base in Nigeria, and that from there, the Niger Republic will be destabilized by the French government using agents operating from Nigeria. Your reaction to this?
That is also not true. That is also not happening. This is because Nigeria's relations with France has been very robust, and it has been there since 1960. In other words, any other relationship or relations France has with any other countries in Africa or West Africa or even with Niger does not affect the relations or relationship Nigeria has with France.
That is Professor Joshua Bola-Rinawa, Director of Research at the Nigerian Institute of International Affairs. He was speaking to reporter Mike Mbonye in Lagos. In mid-2024, protests by young Kenyans sent shockwaves through the country's political scene, forcing the government to drop proposed new taxes and fire several ministers. The youth movement highlighted the challenges Kenya faces as the government tries to increase revenue from citizens who are grappling with the high cost of living and are angry about corruption and what they see as attempts to stifle dissent. Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
As the year comes to an end, President William Ruto's government and a large section of Kenyan youth are still at odds over the direction the country is taking. The discontent erupted in June as Parliament considered a bill that would increase taxes on certain food items and other sectors in the economy to help repay foreign loans and fund development programs. Lawmakers passed the bill, leading protesters storming the Parliament buildings and banning a section of it. Ruto, seeing the public anger, declined to sign the bill into law. Nairobi has also witnessed protests against alleged police brutality. Rights groups say Kenyan security forces killed at least 65 people during protests or while in detention during 2024. On Monday, hundreds of protesters took to the streets of Nairobi to demand the release of Kenyans allegedly abducted from their homes and other places. According to human rights groups, at least 10 young critics of the government were kidnapped by unknown men in the last few weeks. The police have denied their officers were behind the abductions. Speaking in Homa Bay County on Friday, President Ruto said his government will end the mistreatment of youth. He called on parents to discipline their children. These children are a blessing that are given to us. Every parent should take care of their children. Let's work for our children. We, the government, will do our part and we will end the abductions so that the Kenyan youth can live in peace, Ruto said. Boniface Mwangi is a Kenyan activist. He says Kenyan youths are united against the political elite who have made life difficult for them.
The Gen Z movement, actually, they came together, they were united, and they had one goal to reject the finance bill, which is succeeded. And then they went a step further to demand for political reforms and change of the cabinet. And somewhat it happened, and that forced the political elite to come together. So for the first time, you have Uhuru Kenyatta, Raila Odinga, and Ruto in the same camp.
Since the protest, President Ruto has formed what he called a broad-based government. He appointed some politicians allied with former President Uhuru Kenyatta and his 2022 election main challenger Raila Odinga to the office.
Tulianza tukiwa pande tofauti tofauti. Saa hizi tunafunga mwaka.
We started as divided people and are closing the year with a broad-based government. We have brought many Kenyans together, Ruto says. Political observers say this move is designed to better manage the opposition to his administration. Martin Andati, a political analyst, says such political maneuvers will do little to ease the public's anger toward the Ruto administration.
The guys in power are behaving like nothing happened. But the truth is the dynamics completely shifted. But you know, the old class, political class, inclusive of President William Ruto, Raila Odinga, the likes of Kalonzo, they are still stuck in a time warp. They are still thinking along tribal chieftains and political kingpins. Then they are going back to 2007, when these youth are in 2027 already.
Political observers predict a tough political fight ahead, as the Kenyan government and political parties have to constitute a new electoral commission. The current one technically exists, but all the commissioners' terms have expired. Some are concerned that youthful activists will start petitions to recall members of parliament, a move that, if successful, may lead to the fall of the government and an early election before 2027. Mohammed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam, filling in for James Buddy in Washington. Today is Tuesday, December 31st. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And coming up, a truck accident in Ethiopia leaves over 70 people dead. U.S. gun violence prevention measures have been strengthened under the Biden administration, but policy changes are expected once President-elect Donald Trump takes office in January. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias spoke with gun owners and gun safety advocates about the matter.
That gun owners' rights will be protected under his leadership is a promise that President-elect Donald Trump has said he'll swiftly deliver on.
In my second term, we will roll back every Biden attack on the Second Amendment. Attacks are fast and furious starting the minute that Crooked Joe shuffles his way out of the White House.
Almost 47,000 lives were lost to gun violence in 2023, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. President Joe Biden put a series of measures in place that researchers say are helping to bring that number down, explains Jen Polioconis, Director of Policy and Programming at the Johns Hopkins Center for Gun Violence Solutions. She spoke via Skype.
This includes the American Rescue Plan funds to support community violence intervention programs. The Biden administration has strengthened the ability of the ATF and the FBI to regulate the industry.
Gun rights advocates say these measures violate the right to bear arms granted in the Second Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. They are confident Trump will do away with them. Alan Gottlieb is executive vice president of the Second Amendment Foundation. He spoke via Skype.
We don't think that they've done anything to keep people safe. All they've done is infringe on Second Amendment rights.
Supporters are also eager for Trump to fulfill his pledge to sign a concealed carry reciprocity law. It would facilitate permit holders traveling to all 50 states with their weapons. Nick Clark, president of the gun rights group Wisconsin Carry Incorporated, via Skype.
In each state that you pass through, you have to look up their specific gun laws, and in some cases you wouldn't be legal to carry in those particular states. So that's something that we would like to see at the federal level.
Frank Cimarelli's son, Camden, who had a history of mental health problems, died weeks after shooting himself in 2022 with a legally purchased gun. Cimarelli would like gun safety measures such as enhanced background checks to remain in place under the Trump administration.
You know, if a mom or dad wants to keep a gun in the house for protection, I have no problem with that. The problem I have is, why does your right to have a gun overshadow my right to keep a gun out of my house?
Pew Research surveys show there's broad bipartisan support among the public for preventing people with mental illness from purchasing guns. But Americans remain deeply divided on most gun policy proposals. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
At least 71 people died in Ethiopia when a truck packed with passengers plunged into a river, according to the spokesperson for the Southern Sidama Regional Government. The accident occurred in the Bona District, the Regional Communication Bureau said in a statement. Wosin Lela Simeon, spokesperson for the Sidama Regional Government, told Reuters on Monday that at least 68 men died in that accident and three women. He said the truck had missed a bridge and fell into a river and that the road had many bends. He said local traffic police reported the truck was overloaded, which likely caused the accident. Deadly traffic accidents are common in Ethiopia, where driving standards are poor and many vehicles badly maintained. Former President Jimmy Carter's state funeral will be held on January 9th at the Washington National Cathedral and will feature a eulogy by U.S. President Joseph Biden, which will culminate more than a week of ceremonies and tributes. President Biden ordered the federal government to close on January 9th and has declared it a national day of mourning. Former President Carter died on Sunday at the age of 100. He is remembered for striving for peace and fighting disease, especially in Africa. Lindsay Chervinsky, executive director of the George Washington Presidential Library, explains why she thinks Jimmy Carter was so successful as a post-president.
He really established what were the possibilities for a presidential center or foundation. The Carter Center was really first to raise funds and support to try and eradicate disease, to try and help with human rights, try and help protect voting rights, to try and help protect the sanctity of elections around the globe. And those are things that a lot of his successors have been very invested in themselves with their own centers. But he was kind of the first to say this is an acceptable post-presidential activity. prior to him, most former presidents went home and were pretty quiet because that was the expectation. Now, that didn't always rub everyone the right way. Sometimes he was involved in foreign policy, or he would speak out about foreign policy in a way that some of his successors felt was inappropriate. But I think because so many of his activities are really focused on humanitarian efforts, and he demonstrated he lived what it meant to be a virtuous person. He had these values and these virtues and this religious faith that he espoused, and he appeared to do his best to actually live it. That's really hard to criticize.
President Biden also ordered that flags be flown at half staff for 30 days beginning on January 9th. The former president will be taken by motorcade on Saturday through his hometown of Plains, Georgia, then on to the Carter Center in Atlanta, Georgia, where he will lie in repose for mourners for 3 days and then be flown to Washington, D.C. for the cathedral service. He will be buried in Georgia. And now we'd like to share some holiday greetings from listeners in Harare, Zimbabwe.
My name is Gamchirai Chaburumunda. I'm a student leader from Zimbabwe National Students Union at the University of Zimbabwe. I'm wishing you a joyous Christmas and a happy new year. May holiday season be filled with love, laughter, and all your favorite things. To those who are driving, drive safe. Do not drink and drive. Journey mercies to everyone. May your festive season bring joy, bring hope.
My name is Marcus Unawache, based in Harare. I'm an artist, and I would just like to wish you a beautiful, beautiful and amazing Merry Christmas and a prosperous New Year altogether getting into 2025. Cheers to you.
My name is Samuel Gwensi, and I stay in Belvedere in Ward 5. I need to wish residents and citizens of Zimbabwe a Merry Christmas and hope 2026 will be a great year, both in our democracy and governance, but mostly in the material and economic conditions of our country. I wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Hi, my name is Vivid Gwede. I live in Harare and I'm a development practitioner. I wanted to wish all VOA listeners happy holidays. May you take this time to enjoy with your family and have a well-deserved rest. Happy holidays.
Our thanks to reporter Kudzai Vinavashi for gathering those holiday greetings for us. And we at VOA wish all of you, our listeners, a happy and prosperous 2025. And that's it for this Tuesday, December 31st, the last day of the year edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your morning with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, and they are Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the entire Daybreak crew, I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, wishing you a great rest of your week. We'll see you again tomorrow morning.
Presents the latest news about Africa and the world and its news summaries. Africa in Brief airs every day at 400, 500 and 600 UTC. Give us 5 minutes of your time to be brought up to date. Africa in Brief, your trusted source for news.
Hello, this is Linor Mudu, host of Health Chat. Join me for the latest in health news, wellness tips, medical breakthroughs, and much more. Our experts inside the United States and beyond will share some insights on living a healthy life. Tuesdays at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA.
We are bringing women voices to the conversation on things that matter to the hearts and minds of women. From right here in the nation's capital to on the ground from all over the African continent. We hear your voices. Our voices. Right here on VOA on Wednesday.